Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome to the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting, the first meeting of 2023. Today's date is January 3rd, Tuesday, and the meeting is held on Tuesday due to the holiday being observed yesterday. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded. As usual, we will place the meeting audio on our website, which is wmata.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips for people. Anyone joining via phone call, you can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can raise or lower your virtual hands by pressing star 9. Everyone on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you go under reactions, click on the hand raise icon that will raise and lower the virtual hands. If you're able to use these tools, it's helpful because then we know if somebody's intending to speak and we can have one speaker at a time. Everyone is on mute at this time, so thank you. Please do stay on mute unless speaking. It helps eliminate any external noise. Just as a reminder, we do have two American Sign Language interpreters with us on this meeting. Therefore, I would request everyone to please state your name before you start making your comments. It helps them in doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is at the moment. Chair Sheehan, if you permit, I can go ahead and take the read the agenda, followed by taking the roll call of the committee members.
That'd be fine, Anu. Yes.
Thank you. I would share my screen for everyone's convenience so you can see. If you would give me a... Okay, perhaps that's not feasible. Oh, no, I can do it. Apologies for any technical issues in advance. Okay. So... I believe my screen is visible at this point.
Yes.
Thank you. So after I finish reading the agenda, we will go ahead and take the roll call of the AAC members, followed by approval of today's meeting agenda, prior meeting minutes, and the board report by Chair Sheehan. At 5:40, we have a topic, fiscal year 2024 service and fare proposals. And we would have Tom Webster and Mark Irvine to speak on that. At 6:50, we will discuss Hettinger Award. And that would be a committee discussion. At 7:05, we would take any public comments. As you can see, today's meeting is pretty packed and the reports are pretty condensed today. At 7:20, we will have the bus and rail subcommittee report. And at 7:25, we will have the metro access subcommittee report. The meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 7:30 p.m. Now I would stop sharing and I will go ahead and take the roll call of the committee members. Please confirm your presence when I call your name.
Alert, audio now unmuted.
Azhar Atura. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. Rico informed us in advance that he may not be able to attend today's meeting. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Debbie Fisher.
Here.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein.
Here.
Thank you. Timothy Howard. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel.
I am here.
Thank you. Sandy Newsill.
Present.
Thank you. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray.
Present.
Thank you. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semelford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Present.
Thank you. Kelly Simonon.
Here.
Thank you. Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes today's roster. Pat Sheehan, I can go over the public comments information either now or when we begin the section.
Why don't we see if we can handle the agenda, minutes, and board report.
Sounds good.
And then we'll jump into the presentations.
Yeah, okay. The floor, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Welcome, everybody. It's good to be here. Tino, appreciate you being here, even though you're feeling down and out. Good to have everybody here. Hope everyone had good holidays. First on the list here is approval of the agenda. Do I have any additions to this agenda? Or can I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Okay. Second. Good. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or any abstentions? Thank you. Okay. Minutes. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? If none, could I have
this
a motion
Doris,
to? Yeah, go ahead, Doris.
I sent some. Not for the minutes. I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. I think we're both on the same wavelength there with the board report, Doris. I saw that too.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Not a problem. Any additions?
And also, though, the agenda said Monday.
Oh, right. Yeah. I saw that correction. Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Okay. We can make that editorial correction. Any additions or corrections to the minutes? A motion to accept the minutes as presented?
So moved.
Good. Second?
Second.
Good. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition or abstentions? Okay, thank you. Lastly, we have the board report. Doris, you had, I saw a couple, a correction you had. There was a word omitted.
I don't have that in front of me. A new has that. So
right. I also sent the same thing into a new.
I would propose that we adopt the board report. It was a minor editorial, so I propose we adopt the chair report with amendments.
Good. With the correction. Agree. And I made the same one as you did, Doris. Anu?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Okay. I'm sorry. Any other additions to the board report? Motion to accept as amended.
I'd like to give you the freedom to make any changes you need following the RAC meeting tomorrow.
Okay.
Since Mr. Wagner will be presenting it to us and to them, and there will be discussion. So I think you should have some flexibility.
Will do. Good. Thank you. Thank you, Phil. You've been there before, so you know. Okay. Anything, any other suggestions? Motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Second. This.
Very good. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any opposition or abstentions. Okay. Thank you for that. And I appreciate having the flexibility to make any kinds of additions that we might need to make following the RAC meeting. And the reason why Phil said that is because Tom and Mark will also be talking to the RAC tomorrow night. A little bit different information, usually between the RAC and the AAC. So we're lucky tonight to have Tom Webster and Mark Irving to talk to us about fair proposals and schedule updates going forward, and particularly since we have had a little bit of a look at the budget, I think that this discussion is critical. I think that there are some areas, particularly that we have advocated for as a committee, particularly with the fixed fare for Metro Access, that I'm not sure I saw in the upcoming budget. So that is an area of concern. But Tom and Mark, take it away. We appreciate you being here and tell us what we need to know.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. I'll go ahead and pull up the presentation and to introduce myself, Mark Irvin, Director of Strategy and Policy, and joined by Tom Webster. Tom, are you on the line? If Tom is not online yet, then he should be here shortly, but I'll go ahead and get started. If you haven't already read it, or if you have read it, you'd probably notice that, you know, this year we have, you know, much more in terms of magnitude of service proposals and fare change proposals than we do in a typical year. And I think that is perspective, and what's the best way to run the system for the benefit of customers. And so I think there's a lot to discuss, but hopefully you see some of that reflected in the proposed service and fare changes in the budget, which are now out there in the next couple months, going to go for official public comment and engagement, with the anticipation that the budget will be finalized and approved in April. But let me go ahead and share the screen. And so one question, it says I'm disabled from sharing the screen. Is that something that needs to be added so I can do it?
Yeah, give me one quick second.
Or Anna, if you are able to do it, it's the presentation that was
okay. I feel like I can share, but you should be able to share. I can share.
Okay, we've been granted.
Yes. Okay, we can see your screen. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. So the summary of the proposed changes across for service and fares across bus, rail, and there's implications, as you know, in the fare policy for Metro Access fares, is Metrobus is really about advancing some incremental improvements that expand on the big changes that were made now almost a year and a quarter ago with the introduction of more frequent service all day on bus lines that serve about half of bus riders. And this also comes, you know, right at the beginning of this major better bus network redesign effort, which is going to contemplate and include many more changes. So it's about making advancements for frequency and access on a few lines where there's a strong case for it, and there's already been some work advanced there. On rail, the focus is on just delivering more frequent service across the system, especially focused in the core of the system to enable people to have a lot of access no matter where they're coming from, and make transfers very predictable and efficient. And in terms of fares, you know, our fare system has tended not to get great reviews in terms of being simple to understand and use, and saw this as an opportunity to actually propose a fairly major shift in how the rail fares work, by instead of having, you know, different fares at the peak and off-peak weekdays in addition to the different night and weekend fares, to really consolidate the weekday fares and eliminate this peak off-peak difference, and also make a major improvement in terms of access for customers with lower income by launching a 50% discount program for customers that are receiving SNAP benefits. So that discount would be equivalent to the existing senior discount. on the rail system, we have a number of slides that get into it, but at the highest level, it includes service increases on the green, yellow, and orange line. So really focusing on having great service everywhere, and especially high frequent service where the network is carrying the most customers in areas with high ridership potential. And you know, one of the things we've been looking at in particular is how do we make the network function really well as a network? So not just you have orange line riders or green line riders and assume that they just take trips along their line, but you know, someone who's boarding on the green line or the red line or the orange line, you know, how do you make sure they have great access to the whole network? And so this is really about, you know, making sure there's high frequency everywhere, but especially at places where customers make transfers. So the first part of this is this service increase on the green and yellow line that also includes a realignment of the structure of the service. Because if the current approved service on the green and yellow line, it says, you know, the green and yellow line run the same. But what really happens is on the northern part of the line where the green and yellow run together, there's more frequent service. And on the southern parts of the line where the green line is by itself or the yellow line is by itself. So the core of this proposal is to really increase service across the line. So the entire portion of the green and yellow line receive at least the 6 minute service all day. We think this is a great opportunity to grow ridership. It serves fast growing parts of the system. A great opportunity to improve equity, especially along the southern green line, and then should benefit anyone riding on these lines, but especially, you know, will also benefit people whose trips originate other lines because the opportunity to transfer. The service proposal also includes an increase in orange line service. So the baseline there is 10-minute peak service, 12-minute off-peak service. So this would increase to 7.5-minute peak frequency and 10-minute all-day frequency. And so this will have, you know, benefits throughout the orange line and in the core, but especially the ends of the line where the orange line operates by itself. One of the things that got some attention in an earlier presentation that you may have seen is the difference between the service on at the downtown Largo side and the New Carrollton side. And traditionally, New Carrollton side has had the same or even higher ridership than the Largo side, but it gets about half as much service. And so this would, you know, increase the frequency of service on that side of the line where, you know, there's great multimodal connections, there's future future purple line, and improve overall access to the system. So overall, this would be 23% more orange line service. And then we have a sequence of three slides here that are meant to show what this really means from a customer perspective. And so the sequence is here, the service would be more frequent on a number of lines. So if you're a customer waiting on a platform, the trains would be scheduled to come more frequently. So on the green line from 12 minutes to 6 minutes, the yellow line instead of 12 minutes, 6 minutes, and the orange line 7.5 minutes. And what that would mean is faster trip times. This is an example at a transfer station, L'Enfant Plaza. So you're sitting here, you know, have access to travel in all directions without having to wait more than a few minutes for a train. And in terms of how fast customers can get to destinations, travel time is a big part of travel time, and it's the one that we know that customers like the least. In fact, the people who've studied this, you know, you ask someone who doesn't have a watch, like how much time has passed, and if they're moving in a vehicle, they actually perceive the time to be moving faster than if they're waiting for a vehicle. So this makes the trips faster overall, but especially reduces the part that customers find most frustrating. And you know, this part of the sequence is meant to show that if you have lower wait times and faster travel times, you know, that means the system is more useful to customers. People can get more places. So this is We have two examples here. This one is a customer starting near the Anacostia station. You know, with these green and yellow line changes, it would increase the jobs that a customer could reach in a 30-minute trip, including the walk time, by about 25%. So in this example, you know, there's parts of the system that would now be accessible in 30 minutes, including Pentagon, Pentagon City, Crystal City, NOMA on the Red Line, Foggy Bottom on the Blue, Orange, Silver, and Stadium Armory. And similarly, if you're starting from the Southern Yellow Line, so in this example, Braddock Road, because the Yellow Line would be more frequent, but also the Green Line, you'd have about 15% more job access, and there'd be places newly accessible in a 30-minute trip, including Waterfront, Navy Yard, Eastern Market, also NOMA in this example. And we know this is really what transit is all about. It's about the opportunity it provides for people to get places where they want to go, and how long it takes is really a key factor. So in summary, as you mentioned, more frequent service all day. This is an exciting opportunity to not only benefit most customer trips, but also grow the pie, and expect it to result in more customer trips. And bottom line, running more service than we are today. So it's 62% more daily train trips than today, and almost double, or more than double, what we were running last summer. In terms of bus, as I already mentioned, you know, this is about making some incremental improvements. And so there's three changes proposed. The first is the B2, which has always been one of Metro's busiest bus lines. And it was really like the last line out when we created this frequent service network with 12-minute service all day. And it's a top 15 ridership route. It's the only route that's that busy that is not running this 12-minute service. And so that's a good opportunity. The other two examples are the kind of examples where the route is actually being restructured. And this is the kind of thing when the frequent service network was created, you know, that was done as part of the pandemic recovery and in a relatively quick amount of time. And one of the things that we said then was, you know, there's some things we can do pretty quick. Like, we can change the frequency of a route, but actually restructuring a route requires more time and study and coordination. And so these changes follow on the introduction of the frequent service network and improve some of those services that that were upgraded to higher frequency more than a year ago. So this A12 example, right now the route has a bit of an L shape. So it starts on Martin Luther King Jr. Highway, and then...
And for the benefit of the blind, can the presenter describe the slides that he's showing? Because I'm totally blind. I have no clue what you're talking about.
Yes, I can try to do a better job of that. And we also, Ronnie, were you able to share the slides with the attendees? I think we also shared a...
Mark, this is Anu. Actually, because these meetings are open to the public, so not everyone may have access to it.
Okay. Yeah, so this slide shows three bus lines, the B2 in the District of Columbia, the A12 in Maryland, and a new route designation, the 16M in Virginia, that runs along Columbia Pike. And as I mentioned, the B2 would be upgraded to 12 minutes all day. The A12 would be split into two routes. Extending service to downtown Largo, where the route doesn't currently serve. And the 16M service would actually restructure service along Columbia Pike, connecting Skyline City to Crystal City with service every 12 minutes all day. And right now the service terminates at Pentagon City. So this would extend that to Crystal City. So overall, in summary, this would be expected to grow ridership and have a net budget impact of about $5.1 million. I'm going to move on to fairs, and then we'll take, open it up for general discussion and questions. There's only a few fair slides to get through. The first slide is about Metro implementing a regional low-income fare program that Metro would administer. It would offer a 50% discount matching the senior and the current senior and disabled fare. And so customers would qualify, as I mentioned, based on enrollment in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or SNAP. And we're still developing the exact mechanics of how it would work, but a core part of it is the ability to sign up both online and in person. I mean, this is something that has been identified in multiple places as a priority for Metro, including the Bus Transformation Project, and a number of other agencies have implemented this. And as part of the fare changes, it's an important bedrock element of the new fare structure to offer discounts to the customers who need it the most. And this next slide is an overall summary of our existing fare structure, which is reasonably complicated, and the proposed fare structure, which, whatever you think of it, is a simplification on what we have now. And the core of it are a few things. So standardizing the peak and off-peak fares, aligning the rail and bus base fares, and then the discount that we just discussed for low-income customers. So the current fare structure, as you generally know, right, has a different base fare, $2.25 for the peak, $2 for the off-peak, and a different max fare, $6 for the peak, $3.85 for the off-peak. And then we have this $2 flat late night and weekend fare after 9:30. And then our reduced fare program is 50% off the peak fare, which also is sometimes confusing to people because it's not a flat 50%, but 50% off the peak fare, which is generally less than 50% during the off-peak times. And of course, bus is fairly straightforward with the $2 fare. And so what this would do is consolidate the regular weekday fares to a $2 to $6.50 range, and then charge a standard fare per mile. So charge 40 cents per mile after the first 3 miles, while keeping the $2 late night and weekend fare, and then keeping the bus fare. And so, as I mentioned, one of the things it would do is it actually align the minimum fare for all bus and rail trips to be $2, whereas right now, sometimes the minimum fare is $2, sometimes it's $2.25. And so this would actually create some better fare integration across rail and bus, and mean that if you are paying that $2 minimum fare, you can at all times make that fully credited free transfer, because the $2 fare would cover your connecting bus or rail fare. This would represent an increase in the maximum fare from $6 to $6.50. One of the considerations was the impact on Metro access fares. And we believe this also offers some simplification for Metro access trips, and that right now, the majority of Metro access trips cost $4. And so by changing the peak minimum fare from $2.25 to $2, we expect it would increase the number of Metro access trips that are $4. And although it does increase the rail maximum fare to $6.50, it would leave the Metro access maximum fare at $6.50. So summary here is the aim is to simplify the fare structure and offer discounts for low-income customers. And we believe or hope that this does so in a way that advances the fare policy principles that the board adopted more than a year ago. So that's to be customer focused, simple and convenient, equitable, seamless, drive ridership, and generate revenue. And overall, because this is a fare restructure, as opposed to a simple across the board increase. There was actually an opportunity to do this in a way that's expected to both grow ridership and increase revenue, which is generally an unusual thing or hard to do with a fare, with a typical just across the board change to fares. And I see there's a question, so I'll just close with the timeline for the budget, which is like we're at the point now where the board is anticipated to consider or to authorize public hearings later this month, which would then be held in February. And the board would continue to engage with staff and consider the public comments through February and March, with anticipated adoption in April. And then the fiscal year beginning in July, or next fiscal year rather, beginning in July.
Very good.
Thank you, Mark. Presentation. So excited to discuss.
Very good. Thank you, Mark. I'm sure there'll be questions. Anu, we're going to be taking questions from the committee. So do we have any committee members that have their hands raised?
Yes, Chair Sheehan. At this point, we have four members with their hands raised in the order. Denise Rush, Thomas Mangrum, Philip Weintraub, and then Tino Calabia. So Ms. Rush, go ahead, and I would start the timer when you start speaking.
I listened to your proposal, but I'm not quite understanding how it affects Metro Access, and I want to make clear what I do understand, or ask you, am I clear at what I understand? Basically, we are at 650 max. And there's going to be an increase with the fares of the rail or the bus. And when that increase might be 25 cent or 50 cent, because Metro Access is double that fare, it will increase like a dollar if it increases on the bus or the rail for 50 cent. Am I understanding that? So basically we have a 650 max, but we just get pregnant in the middle. We get more, we're charged more. And for low income people, only if they get food stamps, which is SNAP, then they would get a reduction. Am I clear?
I can address that. I think to summarize, there would be no increase in the bus fare. That would stay $2. And then the minimum rail fare would stay $2 on nights and weekends. And then, so in some cases, you know, people taking Metro Access trips would pay less money than they do now. Like we expect the share of $4 trips to increase, and that's already the majority of Metro Access trips, and the max fare wouldn't increase. So no one would increase from 650. Now, this does affect the fares though. So there would be some customers, you know, between $4 and 650 who in some cases would have to some degree, you know, different fares than they have now or higher fares, but it would not be an across the board increase in Metro Access fares. And Christian, if you have anything to add.
I think that the committee was thinking of a flat rate without the confusion, because we have been asking for a flat rate. And yes, we get it after 9 o'clock and on the weekends. Why can't there be a flat rate without the confusion is what I'm not understanding.
And so if I could just add to your point, Ms. Rush, and to my colleagues, yes, that's what the committee has been advocating for, is a flat $4 fare across the board 24/7. And I can assure the committee, well, you all know that staff as well as board and others are aware of this, as Phil, you know, prior chair, was consistent in bringing that to the board, and colleagues have been consistent in hearing that. So that is what you're advocating for, and that's what you're asking for. What Mr. Irving is presenting right now is the current proposal that they may be going to the public with, which is bringing more fares into the flat fare realm, but not all fares. And he's being quite transparent, as we always are, that there are a few trips in the middle, if you will, that could experience a slightly higher fare on Metro Access. So while there would be an increased number of people receiving lower fares, there is that small number in the middle that could be impacted with higher fares as we increase more rail service and the rail service that's not a flat fare. But your point, Ms. Rush, in terms of what you and the committee, so not you personally, but you and the committee have continuously advocated for, is well known to my colleagues, especially Mr. Irving, in this regard. So Anu, can we go to the next person, please? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thomas, if you would come off of mute, and I will start the timer when you start speaking.
Yeah, thank you. My thing is, when it comes to catching Metro Access or whatnot, if we're not going to have a fixed fare or what have you, and what Ms. Rush brought up about the 10 of cards and stuff, would that make a difference in the fare or what have you? And like, would it make a difference in where we go now? Is Metro going to be Metro Access service? The extension of what y'all serve, is it going to be shorter? Is it going to be longer? How's all this going to affect us? And when it comes to the buses and stuff, when they're going up on the fare, on the subway and the bus, that do affect Metro Access, don't it? And Ms. Rush did say, she did bring up the 10 of card. So I want to know, because nobody brought that up, nobody said whether or not it will lower the fare or make the fare more. Thank you.
If you don't mind, Mr. Irving, let me just answer the operation side of the question, because Mr. Mangrum asked two very important questions in this whole piece. Is, will this change, he didn't use these words, but will this change the service area? And the answer for fiscal year 24 is no. The service area that we have now, one that, as I always like to remind folks, is already extended beyond fixed routes. So we've gone beyond the ADA, as you all may remember. That service area is going to remain the same. So you're not going to have your service cut back or reduced there or anything like that. Now you ask about, are the trips going to be longer? I'm guessing or speculating you may be talking about the onboard times. Well, as you all know, during the pandemic, we went to direct trip service as a matter of safety and health for all of the customers, as the pandemic was an unknown quantity to all of us, so you were having direct trips. But since July of last year now, since we're in a new year, since July of 22, we have begun sharing rides. And again, one thing I always like to remind folks, out of all the large public, urban public transportation paratransit providers, we still probably have some of the lowest rates of shared rides there is, as we're still less than 50% of our trips are shared rides. But remember what I started talking about when I first arrived in this role, the fixed route equivalent time is the time you should expect to be on the vehicle, not necessarily the time you will be. And that's the time that it would take me to catch a bus and a train from your pickup location to your destination, that's how long you should expect to be on the van or the car. And one of the ways we're trying to help customers, and you'll hear it more and more as you begin to book your trips, is that the reservation is when they confirm your trip, they're also going to share with you the amount of time that you may be on the vehicle. It's not our goal to keep you on the vehicle forever, but the ADA does allow us a certain amount of time to keep you on the vehicles to fairly serve all our customers. And that's going to happen regardless of any fare changes. So no, generally, you should not see a fare increase because there'll be more flat $4 fares. But for some people, some trips they're taking a day that may cost $5.50 may go to $5.75 or $6 or even to the $6.50 max. There will be some of those, but overall, there should be, if this is the plan and if this goes into effect, overall, most customers on Metro Access would see a reduction in fares that they're currently paying.
Thanks. Thanks, Christian. And the other part of the question was about customers with getting the SNAP discount for rail and bus. And that would operate like the senior discount, which currently does not affect the Metro Access fares.
Okay, thank you. Next would be Philip Weintraub. Philip, go ahead and unmute yourself. And I will start the timer when you start speaking.
Well, I was also was asking, well, you were showing us about the train work weekly. You said you're talking about on the, like the yellow and the orange and the blue. What about on the red line? Because on the red line, you didn't mention anything about the red line.
So it's a good question. So what would happen with the red line is the red line would ramp up to the approved service level in FY23, which we're not currently operating, but in FY24, the plan would be to run that at every 5 minutes end to end during the peak and every 6 minutes all day, 7 days a week until 9:30. So it would be significantly better service than we're running today, but it would be the same as the approved service level in the FY23 budget.
Yeah. Thanks.
And just to add one more thing, I mean, in some ways, you know, the red line is a reasonably good model of having high frequency service across the line and in the core. And in some ways, what the proposal does is it tries to level up other parts of the system that also operate with similar characteristics like the green and yellow line to a similar standard of service.
Yeah.
Anu, do we have anybody else?
Yes, we do. We have Tino Calabia, followed by Steve Caffin, followed by Paul Semerford. I thought Vanessa had her hand up, and then Phil Posner. So okay, Tino, go ahead.
And I'll get in there at some point.
Okay, sure.
If there's anything left to say after all these people talk. Okay.
Tino, go ahead.
Yes. You paint a kind of rosy picture, which could persist for the time in which the monies from the federal pandemic relief funds are around. And I guess that will carry us through fiscal year 2024. But it's unclear that we're going to have the same kind of cushion as we now have from the pandemic relief funds. Another aspect of the situation is this. Maybe your projections take into consideration the fact that the District of Columbia will be providing free bus service beginning, I think, in July of this year. do your projections assume that everything will be all right once free bus service is offered to District of Columbia residents? And then what happens after the fiscal year when we no longer have a cushion, which affords us now to run all these routes that you indicated with the frequency of service that you indicated?
Thanks for the question. And it is correct and right that, you know, this, what we're talking about today and sharing today are the positive parts of the budget and that they represent improvements in service. I mean, the fuller budget package and presentation did go into the, you know, the more concerning long-term picture beyond fiscal year 24, which is fair to say is still an unsolved problem as in terms of how we're going to close the budget gap. And what this is intended to do is put Metro in as good a position as it can be by providing the best service we can, the best customer experience, and doing that in a way that is expected to grow ridership, which should improve the situation compared to where it is now. But it doesn't claim to fully address the long term.
And how about the free bus service? Will that positively or negatively affect your projections for the coming, the current fiscal year 2024?
So that is still developing and hasn't been explicitly taken into account in this proposal, but the general concept there is that the District of Columbia would buy down fares. And so to a general approximation, it shouldn't substantially change the top level budget, but since it all is still developing, I think it's an important factor to consider.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Steve, you're next, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. A couple of questions. The budget meetings always invariably seem to become free-for-alls where groups or individuals, sometimes groups as large as 10 and 15 we've seen, come to plead for particular situations such as bus service changes, which over time have required changes but haven't been done and what have you. But in particular, there are people who submit recommendations or comments in writing. I'm included, and I know numerous other people are too. There hasn't been an acknowledgement of receipt of these comments such that the people know that yes, Metro Rail has that management has received these and are at least giving them consideration. Is that going to be on the agenda to perhaps improve customers' feeling of responsiveness this year during the budget process?
So it's a good point that I'm happy to look into, because
yeah,
would you take right, if you're making a comment, be acknowledged is
an yeah, I well acknowledged, and perhaps even if it's a valid issue, perhaps a response saying, you know, that's a good point, or even we just can't get involved in that kind of thing. I know people have been submitting these. I do every year myself. And I personally have never received an acknowledgement, even that it's been received. And just letting you know, that'd be great. Feeling of involvement is something very important to the writers right now.
I think it's a good point. I'll make a note of that. I've personally been on the other side of so many comments, and you don't know what happens. I can assure you though, the comments are read and people pay attention to what people say in meetings like this and elsewhere. And we get many comments and people look at them. In fact, we republish.
Right.
know, the public input.
Okay, this is a quickie because my time is running out. Would you consider setting as would Hamada consider having an individual or a group of a couple of people set up to let's say handle customers' suggestions or concerns relating to, let's say, a particular bus or current bus service, or maybe a service that was just fine before the pandemic, but the situation has changed and perhaps it hasn't been identified. Right now, the only vehicle is, the online customer service vehicle, which doesn't give a response, and the customer, the rider never feels that it's even been looked into. It almost, the word would be ombudsman, but not really, more a receptive place where customers could call and have actually an interaction. Mark, what do you think about something like that?
I think it's an interesting and good general point. If I can suggest something that's happening right now, which I think actually is meant to create what you're suggesting, as part of the Better Bus Network redesign, there's this major effort to engage customers on substantive questions and issues with the bus network. And there's huge effort going into it to not only be receptive to comments people make, but actually, to get out there and provide opportunities to interact with, people that are planning the service or operating the service. So I think this is an attempt that I encourage everyone to engage with. And I mean, we should also be open to what can we learn from this process that could be incorporated.
Yeah, I'm a Washington, D.C. representative for
Steve, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but okay. We do want to make sure everyone gets their questions.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. Thank you.
Next would be Paul Semelford. Paul, your team will begin with me.
So I only have one question. So this is a question for the presenter, and of course, Mr. Blake, we probably told you to respond. So what we are hearing right now, that low income of 50%, it only applies for those who are seniors, and it would not apply to Metro Access customers. Currently or at all, is that correct? My follow-up, let me give some background to it. So in New York City, they have a program called Fair Fares, which is based on income. And those who qualify, at least I know in the New York City paratransit customers, because they sent information to us, those who qualify by income, they were able to, and they did, they were able to, modify their fares to, half because of, income considerations. Is that something would possibly might think of possibly implementing in the future given this? I'm just thinking about that.
Thanks for the question. In this case, the lower income fare discount for people enrolled in SNAP would apply to people of all ages, so not just seniors. I think the mention of seniors was that it would operate similarly to the existing senior discount. So it would be half off, and also similar to the existing senior discount. It would directly affect the rail and bus fares, but not the Metro Access fares.
Does that conclude your question, Paul?
Yes, it does.
Okay, thank you. Next would be, Vanessa pulled her hand down. So we would go to the next person. That would be Dr. Posner, then Chair Sheehan, and then Doris Ray.
Yes, good evening. I have one question for the planners. It's wonderful that you're increasing frequency in the heavily used rail stations. I might ask that you look into a mechanism to increase frequency at the outdoor stations. I often travel some other way than wait at Eisenhower Avenue or any of the outdoor stations in the summer or winter. And I'm not smart enough to figure out how to do that, but it might be an interesting way to think of your programming. As far as a comment goes, I would hate to say anything negative about the new GM, but his proposed budget totally fails in simplifying fares for Metro Access, except for late night and weekends. The current system is totally not understandable for the average Metro Access rider. The fare calculator, which is based on information that is not updated frequently enough to be accurate, so that people are often paying 30 to 50% more coming home on the same trip on the same day. And they have no way to plan as to how that's going to happen. And the only way to simplify Metro Access fares is what we have been requesting for the last 4 years, flat fare, just as you have on the weekends and in the evenings. We're not seeking a lower fare. It'd be nice to get a lower fare, but understanding for poor individuals who have to budget and count every penny. And by the way, there are a lot of those people that are not on SNAP. It's a shame that only people on SNAP qualify for a fare discount. You might look at some other ways of calculating that, but you'll hear from other people on this committee and for a lot of people at the hearings. But he can't go out and advertise that he is simplifying fares for everybody, because he is not simplifying fares for people with disabilities and poor people with disabilities and old people with disabilities and wealthy people with disabilities too that use the system. So anyway, my time's up. I'll pass on. Thank you for listening, and hopefully you will pass that on, because I'm sure the GM does not want to know he's failed in the first thing he's tried to do.
Thank you for the comment.
All right, thank you. And next would be Patrick Sheehan, followed by Doris Ray.
Thank you, very good. Thank you, Mark, for coming and presenting to us. I'm going to echo much of what Phil has said. I don't see that people with disabilities in this budget are getting a fair shake. There are two things we've talked about. One is equity, and I don't see equity in this. The discounts are that they are given to people who are on food stamps in the SNAP program. I've heard today that SNAP may be a thing of the past. I don't know what's going to happen under the Republican administration, but what happens when SNAP is removed? So if you tied a fair product to an entitlement program, and I think that's risky. Fair simplification, it was one of the core tenets going forward. It would be so much easier, and you have the data on the weekends and you have the data in the evenings to be able to do this kind of work and to say a flat fare of $4. It's confusing, as Phil has said. It is not fair. In some places, you're asking people to pay twice the fare because that's the way the calculation is done. The calculation is not done on the disability fare. It's done on the standard regular fare. And I think that in those areas that we can make things simpler and easier, we should do that. The other thing, as I will say, along with what Phil said, is that the trip planner, I have issues with that. I think the trip planner is probably updated, and this is what I've heard, and this is what I would like to find out, and I think this committee would like to find out, is updated twice a year. So does it, and our fares are calculated off of that inaccurate fare calculator at an unfair rate. And so those are things that I think we need to take into consideration. We could do an audit on the trip planner to see just how accurate it is, or make it make life easy and go with a flat fare for Mentor Access. But I think one of the things that I would want to know is we've had for the past 5 years, we've had platforms closed. We've had slowdowns in what we do. Has that been reflected in the trip planner? I don't know, but I don't think so. Certainly when we have free bus fare in the district, how is that going to be reflected in the trip planner? I have no idea. I don't have a lot of confidence in that area. But as Phil said, this isn't equitable. It isn't really sustainable and is not understandable. We could do a better job in this area. And I don't think the ask is very much. Those are my comments. Thank you.
No, thank you for your comment. I mean, similar to Phil in the last comment, I mean, I'm hearing concern that this doesn't go far enough. I mean, we hope that this at least moves in a direction compared to where it is now that makes things better in terms of simplifying the fares and having fewer differences across time of day. But I do appreciate the comment and understand the concern.
We are passionate about it, Mark. Thank you. I appreciate the presentation. I don't know if I said thank you.
All right, thank you. And next would be Doris Ray. Doris, go ahead.
Hi, this is Doris Ray. And I will first say that I echo what Patrick and Bill have both said and ask, I know we've been told that, you know, fares in a public transit system are not necessarily discounted based on income, so I'm and or programmatic eligibility for a different program. So I'm wondering how that plays out with Metro Access in terms of the ADA civil rights basis for Metro Access, which is an ADA paratransit system. So I think working things out in the simplification manner that has been proposed is important, and I should check into whether, for example, whether bus riders who are on SNAP and are going to have equal access to lower fares as well as Metro Access people, and whether it's going to be equitable. The second thing I want to ask is going forward, what is, usually there are budget hearings, what is the schedule going to be for those budget hearings? When are they going to be announced, and how much leeway are you going to give the entire community, particularly riders of daily riders of public transit, but the disability community to get the word out so we can get people to hearings? And I will say that the former policy of having at least two hearings in each of the tri-state, you know, each of the states in the tri-state area, or perhaps even, for example, in the case of Virginia, we have three major jurisdictions: Fairfax, Arlington, and Alexandria. And so I'm just wondering, in order to get back to where we had the community being able to weigh in, and when we didn't have hearings that started at 5:30 or 6 o'clock in the evening when people are in transit back from work, and rather start it at 7 or 7:30 so that people who really do ride the system have a chance to be at those public hearings in their jurisdiction. So I'm just wondering, what is the communications plan? What is the plan for the hearings?
Thanks for the question. The hearings are expected to be authorized by the board this month and occur in February. And there should be a lot of communications about when they are, as well as opportunities aside from the hearings to give feedback and comments. And in the 6 or 7 years I've been at Metro, I think it's been more often the case than not that things in the budget do change between the proposed and the approved budget, you know, based on, you know, feedback from
the communication plan usually only gives 15 days, and that just really is not.
Thanks for your comment about ways to further increase.
And I'll say that too, coming from, because I'm one of the members here from the TPB's Access for All Committee, and if they were speaking on this, they would say the same.
Very good. Thank you. I know we have, I think, 15 minutes left on this for this topic. Do we have any more hands?
We do not have any hands.
Excuse me, my hand is raised, and I'd like to ask a question of the presenter.
Can we take a few questions from the public since Mr. Irvine is here? And you know, we can take a few questions.
Okay. Same rules apply. What, 2 minutes for the question? Okay.
Yes.
Very good. We can, since we have some time, go ahead, Mr. Torres.
This is Ansel Torres. I have two questions. The first question has to do with the laws governing how fares are charged for disabled people. And, you know, there's this whole elaborate thing about twice the fixed route fare and such. Disabled people like myself who are able to take the bus and the rail, they do not pay a fare. And so twice my fare should be zero. The law permits Metro Access to charge zero fares, yet they do not, unless it's the special case of Uber. And we're very appreciative and very thankful of that. And that service works extremely well. So let me underline, bold, and highlight that. We are very appreciative of it. But I believe that when you have situations where disabled people are essentially being robbed and cheated but when you charge fares calculated from the fare calculator, it doesn't work. We have been overcharged over the years. And I have asked Metro to do an audit of this and they have refused. And I think the time has come for that to be done. So this kind of a robbing of the disabled does not continue. And I think it is shameless that WMATA is opting to do all sorts of things for bus rail, but ignore the cries that's coming from people like myself and my friends on the AAC, if I still have any, and other disabled people like me from the public. Question. I heard there was talk about increasing ridership on bus and rail. I heard nothing about increasing ridership on Metro Access. I believe that it is discriminatory and that is wrong. And what your statements in your presentation did was to reflect exactly what is going on in the budget from what was going on in the budget from last year, where the budget advertising Metro Access service was slashed to almost zero. I'd like to have you address those two issues. Thank you very much.
Okay. But first, Mr. Irvine, you can deal with the second piece, but I've got to just, since the question was really about the ADA, the first one, I just like to take that because we want to keep that on the record, as I like to say. The ADA says that a paratransit provider can charge up to twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare, the published fare, not a fare based on a promotion that we offer a group of customers who happens then that fare to be zero. That's not the published Metro fare. That's a promotion Metro is offering customers who are eligible for Metro access to incentivize and encourage them to use the accessible fixed route system in the spirit of the ADA. So any fare is twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare. Now, to your second point, as we've always agreed with,
Hold on, let me make sure I understand. You're saying the fare that disabled people are getting on bus rail all these years and continuing, that's a promotion?
Absolutely.
Is that how a promotion is defined?
That's a promotion. It's an incentive to use the fixed route service. So you're riding for free.
It's a permanent fare that is a permanent, when is since a permanent any
it's
fare
not a
or
permanent
any price?
Fare. But we got to be clear about what we're saying to the public. Yes, has the incentive to ride for free on fixed route service been around for many, many years? Absolutely. But is there any legal obligation for Metro to offer paratransit customers a free fare? No, there is not.
And when was this promotion? If it is indeed a promotion, when was the last advertising for the promotion of this zero fare? I haven't heard it on the radio, television, or the paper. Promotions are supposed to be advertised to the public. I don't hear these promotions being advertised. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, we say it to customers every time they apply for Metro Access, every time they recertify. It's in the customer guide, and it's highlighted tremendously in the customer guide. But every time a customer applies for Metro Access or recertify, we absolutely encourage it. We say it when we talk about travel training, because our goal, as I've always said to you and others, is not to keep people on a separate but equal service, but to try to make fixed route service so accessible, so available, that customers with disabilities will be using it as much as customers who don't have disabilities that are travel impacting.
Well,
you may not see it on TV, but we're talking to individual customers and we're sharing the information.
Mr. Blake, this is the first time I'm hearing that any business promotes their fares in a user manual. That's a first. Thank you. That's it for me on that subject. That's quite interesting. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. We're not going to argue about that. That's just a fact. So the ADA.
I think that's a sad joke on the disabled committee, Mr. Blake.
Well, I disagree with you, but okay. And I appreciate your feedback. And so the ADA is quite clear on how fares are calculated. And then just one other thing, I wanted to wait for Mr. Irvine to leave, but I've heard this now twice. Again, when we talk about the fare calculator, and I heard Mr. Chairman Sheehan, this is not to debate or disagree. Like you mentioned, well, when their stations are closed and things are happening, what about the fare calculator? Well, now keep in mind, for example, during the pandemic, if we wanted to go strictly to the fare calculator, then that would have meant hundreds, if not thousands, of customers, particularly in Prince George's County, would have been cut off from service. The fact that I kept the service area and hours in large, even despite significant cutbacks to bus and rail, means that at some point, the fare calculator is not part of that calculation. We're using the actual real fares as though there was no pandemic, because that's the only way we can keep service available to all the customers. Again, during the pandemic, we were running nearly 24 hours a day, and we never changed our service area or hours. So I hear the point, but I've always just got to keep putting these things on record, because people hear it and it's gone here, come back.
Actually, I think, sorry, what I said, this is Patrick. I think what I said is not the fare calculator, but going back to the trip planner and saying, and asking whether the trip planner is accurate, and if it's looking at those areas. And because I am, at least what I've heard, is that it gets updated twice a year.
Okay. I'll check on that. But here's the thing again, when you say the trip planner, so if I look at an area like in southwestern Prince George's County, where there used to be bus service, now there's probably none, but Metro Access is still running there, you're not going to see that on the trip planner because there's no fixed route service there. But thanks to myself and management allowing it to happen, we are still providing customers with disabilities public transportation.
Right. But my question goes back to the accuracy of the trip planner and saying that the, and I get what you're saying, and that's good, and I won't argue that benefit, but I would like to know whether the trip planner is accurate, because from the trip planner, the fare calculator is getting that information. And that is what people with disabilities on Metro Access are paying from the fare calculator. But if the trip planner is not accurate, if it does not adjust for the platform and the everything, if it only gets adjusted twice a year, then is that an accurate representation to feed that data into the fare calculator? And I think that's what I would like to
follow up on that. Yeah. But what I'm saying to you, Mr. Chairman, is if you want to tie paratransit strictly to the trip planner, then when rail stops operating and because of those changes, then you're implying that you want paratransit to cut off some people from service.
No, I didn't say that.
I know you're not. I'm saying this is I'm the arguing. Consequence.
I am arguing my side. I get the risk.
I'm just
saying how accurate. I didn't say we make any decisions based on it, but how accurate is the trip planner? That's all I want to know right now.
That's going to be in the record of this meeting.
Get your flip side on that. Yes.
Yes, that'll be in the record on this meeting. I don't believe Mr. Irvin is here to be the spokesperson for the trip planner per se, although I consider it a world-class trip planner. But Mr. Irving, if you want to take that as well as Mr. Torres' second part of the question, that's fair.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Blake, too. Appreciate that.
Thanks.
Fair discussion.
The trip planner should be updated when schedules are updated. On the other question, I appreciate the feedback and take the point on areas of emphasis in the presentation. I will say that the impact on Metro Access fares of the fare simplification proposal was taken into account as an explicit consideration. And we're hopeful there is some benefit here that people will see in terms of, right now, if you take the exact same trip, point A to point B, you could have three different fares, depending on what time of day during the week or what day of the week you're traveling. With the proposed fare structure, there would be no more than two fares. There'd be the standard weekday fare, or if you're traveling late night after 9:30 or on a weekend, it would be no more than $4. So we hope that does provide some benefit. And I just want to let you know that this was factored into the proposal.
Changes in the bus frequency, the rail frequency, and calculating on the fastest trip. There are something like 270,000 iterations of fares during a one-hour period. And the fare calculator was set up to pick the lowest fare of those 270,000. But it's still very confusing to the public. And that's the problem. It's, again, simplification. Mm-hmm. And the simplest thing for everyone, and I think you'll agree to that, is a flat fare. And as Pat Sheehan has said, you've got the data. And I think you'll find that a flat fare of $4 will actually increase fare box recovery. Because right now, if you take a look at what the average fare is for Metro Access, and Mr. Blake will tell you that, it's closer to $2 than it is to $6.50. The majority of rides are between $2 and $4. So if you pick a $4 flat fare, your fare box recovery is going to go up. So that would make everybody happy. WMATA's ridership would understand what they're paying. WMATA would be getting more money in the fare box. And so, again, thank you for listening.
Hold on. In fairness to the answer to my question, though, I don't think Mark answered my question at all. I don't even think he even touched on it. My question had to do with promoting ridership on bus rail. And I want to know, where is the promotion for disabled people to ride Metro Access? That's the question I asked. This was just a continuation of the previous question. And so if you can answer that question, if you have an answer to it, sir, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question. And as I understood the question, it was about, you know, the service changes being contemplated are about, you know, making changes to rail and bus service with the goal of making the service better for customers and hopefully getting more people to ride. I mean, that is not intended to suggest that promotion of Metro Access is not a goal, but more a reflection of just like the way Metro Access service works is sort of fundamentally a different kind of, you know, on-demand service, right? That's not.
So what I understand it to be, if I get you correct, sir, essentially what you're saying, it's a trickle-down type of approach that WMATA is taking. So you do what you do for bus and rail, and then that trickles down to Metro Access. So in other words, no reprogramming is being done for Metro Access. It's, you know, we essentially grab whatever crumbs that falls off the table. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, I could just can I just say something?
Okay, and then after that, we need to move on to our next discussion.
We are at 6:50.
We are at 6:50.
And I want to thank you, Mark, again, and I know the committee appreciates your transparency. When we say promoting Metro Access, and again, so I can speak to this simply because I'm such a hands-on type of manager. My numbers online, customers, word of mouth. I can just tell you, I know there's a big auto company that's out there. Everybody kind of knows that auto company. They don't do any marketing. They're known for not marketing. You don't see the TV commercials. They have word of mouth because of the quality or the benefits that their environmentally friendly vehicles bring to society. I can tell you right now, my phone is buzzing every single day of customers interested in signing up for Metro Access, and particularly to join the Abilities Ride program because they hear of the benefits of it. I understand, you know, some customers may want a uniform approach to everything, and if they don't see the same thing on one hand that they see on the other, that there's some sort of nefarious deed that's underway. But I can assure you that our ridership numbers are steadily increasing much faster than fixed route numbers are. Partly is because of the added demand for Abilities Ride. I can tell you that registrations are ticking up back to the pre-pandemic levels, partly because of Abilities Ride and free trips that customers want to get on there. So as I always say, advocate, push, we do listen, but you know, I run the business. I run the business in a way that I believe has benefited customers and generates the type of word of mouth and direct to consumer behavior that has been positive in terms of keeping our ridership up, as well as gaining new people who are interested in both fixed route for people with disabilities and the travel training, as well as the paratransit and alternative services. I would what you should just consider. But Mr. Good. Irvine, if you want to close out, and I'm not trying to take over the chairman, but I just wanted to put that on the record as well for Ms. Sharma's meeting minutes.
All right. I think we are at time. Mark, thank you so much for this. Wasn't quite sure we were going to go all the way up to 6:50, but we sure did.
No, thank you very much for an engaged discussion.
One thing we will always be is engaged. We may not always agree, and you'll get all kinds of viewpoints, but thank you for listening. And I guess if you're going to be at the rack on Wednesday, tomorrow night, I guess Tom gets to do the whole hour or so, right? Because you've already done your bit tonight here.
Yeah, that's right.
Good. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Anu. And so next we have the Hettinger Award discussion for about 15 minutes or so. Anu, you and I talked briefly earlier today, and you want to tell the committee what we have and plans going forward. I know we've got two. We have two nominees, and why don't you take it from what you know? Thanks. Oh,
sure. So I did share the two complete nominations that we received with the committee, and the individuals who nominated. Pat Sheehan nominated Jim Hamry, and Steve Caffin nominated Tino Calabia. At this point, and beyond the complete nominations, we had some email communications supporting other candidates, but we only had two complete nominations received for the two individuals I just stated. At this point, I would ask for Chair Sheehan, followed by Steve Caffin, to take a moment and make their comments for the people they're nominating. So
thank you, Anu. And you know, the package that was asked to be put forward was an essay followed by a form that gave information on the nominator versus the nominee. And I want to rise to nominate Jim Hamry for the Hettinger Award. I think we've got two good candidates tonight, but I think that Jim, for over 30 years, has done a remarkable job with WMATA. In three areas, I think that he has been just a tremendous asset to WMATA, but to the disability community. And I think because bus is such a critical element, he spent over the 30 years coming to this committee, giving us the ups and downs, the bus routes that were going to be changed, the straight information about what was going on in the different regions, listening to us talk about bus stops, listening to us talk about Prince George's County, and advocating for more routes there. For more routes, even so that metro access wouldn't be cut because bus would be cut. And that was one area where he was dependable. He was critical, gave us critical information, gave us timely information, and also gave us a focus on the bus and how it would impact people with disabilities. Because I saw him give similar presentations over at the RAC. And at the RAC, it was more of a ridership. It didn't have the disability focus that we did. And that's one area that I thought he was dependable and critical. And we wouldn't have been able to make the recommendations that we made without his information. In the second area, we had the second phase where we had shutdowns. We had platforms being renovated and all of that. Jim came in and was able to talk to us about what the shutdown area would be like, had the bus transportation systems available to be able to get us from point A to point B, was able to ensure that shuttles were available, worked with the metro access vehicles to ensure that as best as he could do, he was able to make sure that we had all of that working properly. In the four or five or six shutdowns that we had where we were renovating platforms, everything that he did worked really flawlessly. We didn't have a lot of hiccups, a lot of problems. If we had hiccups or problems, or if we had issues, we could talk to Jim, and Jim would give us updates, and he would go and correct things. So he was just very great to work with. And I think one of the other areas, you know, particularly in the Better Bus Network, he has worked in the planning of future enhancements with bus, making sure that bus is an integral part of the metro system. If we don't have bus, we don't have anything. We don't have metro access. You've seen where metro access and other areas have been cut because the bus has been cut. And Jim did his best to make sure that the bus network was viable. Signage was there. Signage was improved under his leadership. I think that he's just been a tremendous asset and someone we could count on. And lastly, and I don't think we see the benefits of this, but I've heard it throughout WMATA. He has done a tremendous job training people underneath him who respect his leadership, respect his contribution, understand the importance of what he was trying to do. So he leaves a legacy behind him of bus planners, bus schedulers, and people who are dedicated to ensuring that we have a good bus system. And for those three or four reasons, I would like to nominate Jim Hamry for the Hettinger Award. I think it is well-deserved. Thank you, Anu.
Thank you, Chair Sheehan. Steve Kaplan, if you would come off mute and take a minute to make your comments.
Sure. Sure, I definitely will. And it's my pleasure to nominate the person I'm going to speak about. I'd also like to say that another individual whom I respect very much for her lifetime of inspiring service, and especially in the last few years, was also talked about. And I see the formal paperwork isn't in, but I would like to, I'm not questioned, but I would like to ask if those emails constitute an essay or not. And then I certainly would like to nominate Tina.
So Steve, to answer your questions, as I said earlier, and in my email to the committee members, we only received two completed packages. The deadline was last Friday, and I did try to send reminders to the committee members three times to make sure that everyone who intended to send their nominations did have an opportunity to do so. I do understand everybody's lives do get very busy and things happen, but we received only two complete nominations.
Okay, let me continue. It's my pleasure to nominate a person we all know for service, for a longevity of service that extends way beyond the AAC. You know, we know Tino for his service in almost 6 years on the AAC, and also for his stellar service as chairman of the Bus Rail Committee, and assuming that position single-handedly without a vice chairman when the vice chair position suddenly became vacant, and did a remarkable job. But it's it's not, even though this is all volunteer, it's not about doing one's position. Tino goes over and above, and he's done this for almost 6 years, over and above to be an incredible advocate and keep us informed and provide information and photographs that he goes out and takes. This is, I if it's part of his job description as chairman, he really it's really with an exclamation point. I just want to very quickly, for about 10 seconds, read to you in this last year, in 2022, the pieces of information above and beyond the meetings that Tino presented to us, bus stops in need of refurbishment, fare evasion, safety issues at bus stop islands, bicycle and scooter safety concerns at crosswalks, including the Idaho stop, scooters lying dangerously, masking, which has always been a big deal for Tino and for all of us, and elevators at rail stations, where Tino went out and looked at the different stations to see issues such as where the buttons were they aligned, and came back and yet once again reported to us with an email and with photographs. And it's been a, you know, this particular year has a, has truly accentuated the remarkable depth that Tino puts into his work, as well as the respect that he's earned. But you know what we, what some of us don't know, and I didn't know until I looked further into it, is Tino's lifelong commitment to the ideals of Mr. Hettinger. He was the director of the EEO office with the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights for the East Coast, which is a remarkably important position, engaging in a myriad of issues I understand. He also served with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for 16 years, and I'm sure he got involved with the Fair Housing Act as part of that, which is critical to our constituents. He's a local man. He's a college graduate locally at Georgetown, got his MBA at his master's MA at Columbia University. And his lifetime of accomplishments and his personal characteristics, including, the integrity and decency that he puts out every single week, as well as the leadership that he's given to us, I think exemplify the standards of Mr. Hettinger and make Tino, I think, a remarkable candidate for the award. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Very well done. Anu, so from here, I think we would talk about next steps going forward. You've heard my representation of Jim and mm-hmm. Steve's representation of Tino. Yes. And so next steps, Anu?
So Chair Sheehan, this is Anu. The next steps would be take a vote of the committee members. We can do that electronically. Mm-hmm. And the deadline that was set ahead of time, as everyone may recall, is Friday, January 6th. If everyone who would like to, I'm hoping everybody would be able to vote, would send their emails voting for one or the other candidate by 5 p.m. on Friday, January 6th. And we can share the conclusion or the results of the electronic vote at the next PRS meeting.
And they would send that to you, Anu?
Yes, thank you. So please send your emails to me, providing your votes. And Tino, I see you have raised your hand. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's a little awkward for me to speak. Many people know that Steve and I are friends. We found that out early once we talked about the Peace Corps and found out that we both served in the Peace Corps. And I've written and published a book, and Steve has published a dozen or more books. So we also chatted about that. So it's well known that we are personally friends, and I must admit, I do appreciate the thoughtfulness of Steve and his description of part of my background. But it is awkward for me to comment on the merits of the two candidates that you have before you. I was one of the people regarding nominations who thought of encouraging the nomination and election, actually, of Senator Tammy Duckworth. And I wrote recently about Dick Hettinger, who actually played a big role taking on WMATA and the powers that be in court to force the construction of elevators in our system, that is the metro station system. he did that. That's no small feat. And I don't know how many of us are brave enough to have taken such a thing on. with respect to Tammy Duckworth, in a sense, she's a bookend to that. While he forced WMATA to make our system accessible by installing elevators, Tammy Duckworth now has been championing the idea of, and not only the idea, but encouraging federal funding for all the older subway systems in the US to be like Washington's Metro and also have subway systems to make them accessible to people with disabilities and others. So in a way, one complements the other. Hettinger forced DC powers to be to create our system and have it elevators so that they would be accessible. And now Senator Duckworth is forwarding legislation and bills to provide funding for similar metro systems to do likewise in their much older systems built before the advent of elevators in subway stations. So my idea had been that, and I must admit, when I went away on holiday leave with 15 of my immediate family, 3 children and 7 grandchildren, I kind of short-circuited what I should have done with respect to nominating her and completing a form and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, I knew that Jim Hamry, whom I have a great deal of respect for, was being nominated, and I didn't think that she would have a chance to stand for the election for in such competition. So I was derelict in that sense that I didn't complete a nomination.
I apologize. I don't mean to interrupt, but I just want to clarify that we are at 7:13 and we do have members for public comments. Very quickly, I do want to mention that this is for the 2022 Hettinger Award. We do hold this award every year. So candidates can be nominated for 2023. And we know that we will be holding the award ceremony virtually or in person. We don't know, maybe virtually, but perhaps, you know, we can get our thoughts together and start thinking who we may want to nominate for 2023.
Thank you, Anu.
I do want to close this topic. I do apologize for anyone who might want to make any comments, but we must take public comments. But please do send your emails with your comments with your votes to me. Deadline is Friday, 5 p.m. And Chair Sheehan, did you have any further comments before we go to public comments?
No, just agreeing with you. We're going to move on to public comments next. And of course, Tino, I get what you're talking about. I just say that, you know, we can tie her good works to projects in the Washington WMATA system, as Dick Hettinger did his work in Washington, D.C., and make those nominations. There are some good candidates that people talked about. So let's get them in next year for 2023. We've got 2 strong candidates here, and I thank you for the presentations, Tino, and thank you. So let me go to public comment period, if I may.
Chair Sheehan, we have one member who has given his name, Anson Torres. Mr. Okay. Torres, I would start the 3-minute timer when you start to speak.
Excellent. Go ahead, sir.
Ansel Torres. Here is my first comment. I have several. I was unable to download any of the documents for this meeting. It appears that the file is, it is a name saying that you can click on this to get the document. When you click on it, it says, oops. It's saying that I'm asking it to do something that is not possible. I think we need to be very careful about this because as it stands right now, there was no public notice for this meeting on the web where it is supposed to be, and the supporting documents are not there either. I continue to raise alarm and be concerned about Mr. Sheehan being the chair of this committee. And let me say here and say very clear that I have nothing personal against Mr. Sheehan. This committee should be about laws and not of men. And if the law says that it's permissible for Mr. Sheehan to be on this committee, chairing it, I think he should be. But as I read it, there are no laws that I can find in the bylaws for this committee that says that that is possible. I wrote the committee about it. I wrote the board about it. Like Mr. Steve Keffen was saying, there were no responses. Well, you get an automated response, but you know it's not a human that's talking to you. It's just a message that says, we got your message, and we'll get back to you. I'm deeply concerned about that. The legitimacy of AAC as it stands as a spokesperson, a spokesgroup for the disabled is in serious doubt. And I continue to be concerned. And until this issue is addressed, I will not allow it to go away. And I will not allow the committee or even the board to duck this issue because I believe it is an important one. The presentation that we received today, WMATA is continuing to show its disrespect for the disabled, disrespect for this committee, by essentially totally ignoring anything that we are asking in terms of fares. I think when we start beating around the bush and talking about what's really going on and not saying things explicitly as they exist, they will continue to ignore us. And when we don't follow our own rules that's on the books for running this committee, I think they should continue to ignore you because you're not respecting yourself by following your own rules. That's my position there. Mr. Blake made it very clear in the last meeting that he has no intention, and by extension, WMATA has no extension with cooperating and providing me, a member of the public, a taxpaying member of the public that supports this WMATA institution, in providing me and cooperating in providing with me information about what happens to the Metro Access surplus. He has become very stubborn and obstinate about this point. But like the other points that I've mentioned so far, until there's a remedy to this, I will not allow them to go away.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm done.
I have not seen any email regarding your concerns, Mr. Torres. So if you could forward that again, I will be happy to answer your concerns to the best of my ability. So yeah, I know if we could get me that would be fine.
Yeah, I did send it to the email address for the chair, and I know Anu usually passes those.
Okay, so I just want to make sure because you're right. I do want to respond to your concerns, and I think that's fair, and I'll be happy to do that. Anu, if we could track that down, make sure I get a copy, that would be great.
We will definitely look into that.
Great,
and the website. Look into the website as well.
I just want to mention one thing. Mr. Torres, when did you try to access the documents? Was it
today? Just before this meeting started.
Okay, thank you for informing me. And this is just general information. Anytime I place the documents on the website, I always check. I had checked, so apparently there must be a glitch at the now, which I had not checked today. But thank you for letting me know. We'll get that corrected.
Very good. Thank you. Do we have any other public comments?
I see Doris has her hand up. I'm not sure if this is from prior, or Doris, did you want to make any public comments? And then I have Philip Weintraub who has his hand up. Doris, did you want to make any comments? If you do, I would start the timer when you start speaking.
Yeah, I was actually had my hand up with regard to the item. And I do want to say that although I wasn't able to access what you, when I accessed the nominations, I did not see the nomination, but I want to say how excited I am about his nomination. And the only other thing I want to say is that I think it's important maybe for the committee at some point soon to re-review the bylaws, because I was on the bylaws committee, as you were, I believe, Pat, and I recall Alfred was, and some of us, and Dr. Posner. And I'm not sure whether we're following them or not, but I think newer members of the committee need to be able to see that. I was surprised when I did read the material regarding the nomination for the Hettinger Award, to see that staff could be nominated, because I am dead sure of my memory that at one point that was not the case. In fact, it was not the case, because we had an award, an excellence award, I forget the full title of it, but 62%. The excellence award where for staff, and the nomination for Mr. Hambry, I think that is evidence of a staff person who has done an excellent job for WMATA and should be rewarded for that and rewarded for it publicly. But the Hettinger Award was certainly originally conceived to be giving an award to people with disabilities, or perhaps other advocates, like people like Kathy Hudgens, who had taken strong advocacy positions in favor in support of the disability community to do what Dick Hettinger did. And what Dick Hettinger did, we would not have an accessible subway. I don't know when we would have gotten it, but for his action to that lawsuit. And I think that kind of gutsy, supportive action is what Senator Duckworth did. And to do it in another year, this is the year we got that, and in fact, it might have been year before in 21. But this is when we got that, and this is when she needs and should have that award. But that all being said, and unfortunately, because of things that were beyond my control, I couldn't help with that. So all I want to
Doris, I do apologize. I don't mean to interrupt. We do have two more members.
Could you just let me finish a sentence?
Doris, you're at time.
All I want to end by saying is that I think that it's wonderful that Steve has nominated Pino and I.
Thank you, Doris. We will move on. As I said earlier, we've got two strong candidates, and I appreciate both nominations. And if we want to look at the award criteria for 2023, we certainly can do that. And noted the other comment on the other document that we need to update. Let's see. We are at, I think you get both 2 minutes. Anu?
Philip Weintraub is next, Chair.
Oh. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Philip. We probably won't get to bus and rail reports tonight, then. We
probably won't.
Okay, go ahead.
Weintraub, and then we have Denise Rush.
Okay, let me go to Philip and Denise, and you'll have to make it fairly quick because then you'll be wrapping up, right? Well, we won't have our subcommittee reports. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was also thinking, like, first of all, I think that, like, the short time I've been on the committee, I haven't had a hard time trying to figure out, and that's why I just couldn't get the nomination, because I had a hard time deciding, because I just need to, like, take a little while to learn what the members, learn what everyone's doing before I can figure out who I can nominate. And also I want to piggyback on, like, how, like, we've been lulled our, like, everything that's back to Austin. Yeah. Gosh, I can't talk over that stat. And also, I was I can't talk over it. Hello? Yeah, and also,
Anu, you're muted. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but
thank you. Yes. I realize. Go ahead, Philip.
And I also was to think about this other thing about that, how they're not, like, a lot of them, that they're not listening to us about the equity. I was thinking that if we could maybe, like, as we said, that as we're going into the new year, that we start work doing the hybrid meetings. But, like, maybe if they see our presence in our in the Metro WMETA offices, maybe that'll get them to take us more seriously.
Okay, thank you, Philip. Ms. Rush, go ahead.
Previously, and we've had many, I have attended many Hessinger Awards. I have received the Hessinger Award. But Antonio Stevens worked for years, and when he retired, he received the Hessinger Award. He was doing his job when he was with WMATA, but he retired, and he was acknowledged and received it. And Jim was doing his job, and he has retired, and that's why I think he should receive the award because of what he did while doing his job. There are others who were nominated and received it. Yes, they were doing their job, but they retired, and I think they should receive it. In 2023, we do need to look at the bylaws and how the nomination should be done. Thank you.
Thank you, Denise. Anu, do you have some closing remarks? Your usual wrap up. Thank you.
Yes, I will take a quick moment and remind everyone any members of the public, if they'd like to make any public comments, you can do so before or after the meeting as well. Just call and leave a message at 202-962-1100 or send an email at metroaacchair@wmata.com. And that concludes my announcement. Thank you.
Thank you, Anu. Do I have a motion to adjourn? I think we're right at 7:30.
So moved.
All right. Very good. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right, Tino. Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thanks, everybody. Aye. Any abstentions or nays? Good. Meeting adjourned.
Just let everyone know I sent you a revised Metro Access agenda to look at. Thank you. Bye. Love you.
Great meeting, everybody. Good night.
Good night, bye. Everybody.